chet over here.
So he's holding in the middle here of describing that Hashem has no body. He's proved it. He's proved God's oneness from his incorporeality through the fact that there is no end to the koach that drives the world around. Now in Ches he says this element, this item, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not a body, is not only logical, it's not only a logical corollary of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's oneness, but Harei Mefurish B'Torah B'Navi She'en HaKadosh Baruch Hu Gufa Gviya. It is Mefurish in the Torah and in the Navi that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not a corporal being. Shenemar, it says, Ki Hashem Hu Elokim B'Shemayim Mimal V'La'aretz Mitachas. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a God both in heavens above and on the earth underneath. V'haguf lo yeh b'shtei mekomos. And the body, and a body cannot be two places. In other words, the Rambam is actually giving a twist to the pasuk over here. When we say God is in the heavens above and in the earth below, what we're saying is space is irrelevant to God. You know, when you limit a person, you say he lives over here, you mean he doesn't live there. He works here, he doesn't work there. He's this tall, it means he's not, he doesn't reach this place. Saying that Hashem is both in Shemayim and Eretz means that he is really not in any sense of place. So therefore, a body could not, there is no such thing as a corporal body that's not within place. So therefore, the Pasuk is telling you, God is not defined in terms of space. That's really where Rambam is the Pasuk. And it's one of these Pasukim that it's easy to tell a kid, Hashem is both in heavens and on earth, but to give it a little bit of an adult explanation, that's what Rambam is doing. God is irrelevant to space. So to say that God is up there or down here is an irrelevant statement. One. V'nemar, on second pasuk, ki lo ri'isem kol temuna, you have not seen any image. One of the strict injunctions is when you were at Har Sinai, you heard a voice, you heard commandments, you didn't see anything, so there was no sense of a body. V'nemar, and it says ki lo ri'isem kol temuna, v'nemar vel mitidam yuni v'ashave, to whom can you compare me and I will be equivalent or similar to. Ve'ilu hayaguf haydevash hagufim. In other words, if God was anything body-like, there could not be a statement, you can't compare it to anything. Well, you can. It's got length, height, width, density, texture, something about it that you can compare. The fact that there is nothing in our experience that you can compare God to means that it is not corporal. It's not of the nature of items that we're familiar with.
Well, how do you then deal with the idea that there was a voice? I mean, why make a distinction between something visual and something auditory?
Okay.
The voice.
Good point, right? Fine.
It's still something that's a physical manifestation.
Okay. The difference between sight and sound is when you see something, the primary focus is that that element, that item, has revealed itself. And you are on top of it, you know, I see it, you know. So that means that the thing itself is exposed. It's whatever it is, when I see through the ploy that you're using, it means your ploy has been exposed. And there's that sense of derogatory aspect about you. And my domination, I see it. And whatever facet is it. Listening is primarily being told what to do. And all I know is, when you tell me to do something, when I say, I see and I understand why I should do it, it means I'm doing it, and thank you very much, and I'm seeing it, and so on. When someone tells you, do it this way, you don't really have a grasp in it, and the speech is only an act of communication, how to get the message across. So, a voice was a created entity. But that created entity is a communication to us rather than an exposure of God as what he is. So when we heard, even in allegorical terms, if we were to see God, means God can be exposed. He's got something that can be grasped, and I've seen it. I've taken hold of it. When God told us, it means He communicated to us that this is what He would like. So we don't have a grasp in what God is by Him telling us, but it's sort of God having us. Maybe sometime we'll speak about it. Sound and sight have two, in dealing in Machshava and these in Yanim, sight and sound are two very different facets of personality. Sound is what the other person has over me. That's why a slave, you're born as heir, because it's the instrument where somebody has me. An ozen, an ear, is also in Hebrew the ear of a cup that you grab it with it. So when you tell somebody to do something, it's the way, you don't know anything about me but my telling to do something, but I am dominating you and telling you what to do. When you see what I'm all about, it means I've got a metzias, and that person has seen it, and he's the one who's on top of it. So sound, God gives the Torah. He tells us very clearly, this is what I want you folks to do. All of Torah is the voice of God. And it, obviously the voice we heard was manufactured, but that gives us no real clue to God Himself. Were we to see something, means there's something of God that we can grab. Okay, in Cain, Mao ze shenema betoro vitachas raglov, ksuvim beetzbel akim. By the way, an aside remark a little bit about Ches, one of the reasons why Kabbalah was off limits for people that were not Talmid Chachamim was the difficulty of people to grasp ideas that you must use physical entities as a mushel, and yet you can't believe and grab onto any of the physical entities. It's maddening. You speak about God's right side and left side because you need some way to describe it. And God forbid if you believe in a right side and a left side, you're not Bikoris. so you've got to have extraordinary. It's like
the chariot.
What?
The chariot.
Yeah, well, all of it. It's like people, you know, you have this the popular science type lectures of varying degrees, and people speak about, you know, I don't know, the superstrings and the wormholes, and they've got, you know, they've got other people make developments along those superstrings, and you know, because you make models of it and pictures of it, and hey, it's only an idea. It doesn't exist in any way. I mean, somebody's made a cute picture just to present it to an audience, but it's not something that really exists like that in any sense of the word. I remember how brokenhearted I was when I discovered that the atom doesn't look like a solar system at all. That whole model that you labored in high school to make little electrons whirling around, it's just somebody's imagination, but it's not. It's just a way of expressing certain relationships. But it's no one has seen it that way, and it's not exactly that way either. But that's one of the reasons. This problem over here, and if you take a look at like beginner type Sfarim and these things, beginner type Sfarim, I mean by Kedosh Olam, by people who wrote these things, you get a third of the Sefer is taken up with Chazal about how you dare not believe that God is a body. There's a sort of sharp joke at the expense of the Chassidim, that's all called Ashlag Chassidim, whose Rebbe wrote a big commentary on the Zohar and was believed very hard that everybody should learn Zohar and Kabbalah, and it's very important. Most people were very at odds with the Shita. Many people respect him personally, but they really felt that was terribly wrong. And I mean, you know, he had his right to argue, and he lived about, I mean, he died somewhere in the 40s or 30s, something like that type of time framework. So and they go around selling the Zohar with the Sulam, which is the Pirush that he wrote, like to even common folks and so on. So one of the course people was sitting and he'd done some of the studying of the Zohar, and then one day he walks into the shul and he hears somebody saying Vayvarach David, and he says L'cha Hashem Agdulo V'Agvur V'Teferes V'Netzach V'Hod, which is the pasuk where we know most of the spheros from are based on that pasuk. So this person, this new novice, this Kabbalah novice, turns to this guy and says, how come you're saying these words? You don't know what they mean. Like, Gdula, Gvura, the fact that's a whole, you're just saying words, they don't mean anything. So the guy got a little embarrassed at first, because he's right. He says, well, explain it to me. He said, well, it's very simple. He says, Kedula is God's right hand, Gvura is his left hand, Teferis is the belly button, and you know, because that's the way it's presented, you know, in words, and somebody who even has the slightest feeling that way is kind of not precocious. So that's why, because of this, there was a tremendous reluctance. It needs a tremendous amount of mental ability and fineness of conceptualization to be able. You need a mashal to tell you what it is, but then you got to strip it away and say it's just a relationship. As this is to this, so is this to this. As right is to left in our experience, strip away anything that's materially right to left and just visualize the relationship. And that's something that needs a lot of a fineness of thought for it.
It's sort of interesting that in order to really describe physical entities, you use mathematics. Isn't Kabbalah, in a sense
it's the same thing. True. And it's the same way, like somebody who's good with equations can picture what the line is going to look like from the equation. And it's remarkable. Somebody actually, as a very, very side remark, somebody has written a lot of theses on this. He's a firm person. His name is Mark Steiner. He's a professor of, I believe his philosophy is, but his thing is, he's a firm guy, an American guy. I think he's in Israel. I met him in Israel when he was teaching Hebrew U. He does a lot of work with the relationship of math to reality as being something which we take for granted, but is really a pella. That what works in math works in the world. I mean, he's written a lot of. I mean, it's his thesis in 100 different variations. But it's really remarkable reading. Okay, Tess. In Cain, Mahu Zesh Nema Betorah Betachas Raglov. Why does it say the Torah is full of these anthropomorphic terms under God's feet? Ksuvim Be'etzba Lakim, Yad Hashem, Eni Hashem, Ozne Hashem, Gitzorma Alalu. Hakol Lefi Daiton Shalnei Adam. This is all meant to apply itself to human understanding. Who? She'ena Makirin Ela Hagufos, because they only recognize bodies. V'dibra Torah Koloshem Bnei Adam. And the Torah spoke as people understand. The Hakol Kinuim, these are just appellations, they're just nicknames. Kmo Shenema, like it says, Im Shanosi Berak Harbi. If God speaks about unloading his sword, V'chicharev Yeshlo, does God have a sword? V'chicharev Horik, does he kill with a sword? El Mashal, Vakol Mashal. It is a Mashal, and everything else like it is a Mashal. Fine. This, in a certain sense, is the ABCs of understanding HaKadosh Baruch Hu's these descriptions. Raya L'dav Hazeh, a proof of this. A proof that all of these elements are just Mishalim. Shenavi Echad Oimer, Shera HaKadosh Baruch Hu Levushe Kitlag Chiver. One prophet said he saw God dressed with a cloak that's white like snow. Vechadro chamutz begadim ibatra, and one saw him in red garments. Moshe Rabbeinu atzim ro'a layam ki gibor simulchama. Moshe Rabbeinu saw him on the yam like a gibor. Ubesinai keshliach tzibotav, and in Sinai like a shliach tzibor. Loma, this all teaches us she'ein lo dmus etzura ala kol b'mar nevua b'machse. Now this is interesting. The Rambam is looking for another proof. I mean, well, he says that you see that they can't mean as they are, because one place it says his clothing is white, one place it says red. I don't understand so much the proof. I mean, I sometimes wear, even I change occasionally, and I wear sometimes a blue suit and sometimes a black suit. It kind of stays around dark, not as colorful as some of Dennis's stuff, but it does change. I mean, sometimes the tie is even like blue or black or gray, whatever particular tie is there. Why is that? I mean, in other words, if we're describing HaKadosh Baruch Hu as tall or short or dark or white, I could understand that. But he's dealing here with the garments. So what is the proof of that? And maybe we'll come back to it later. But it's interesting. He's saying this proves. So if it would be changes in the way hand or eye or foot would be described, I could understand it. But the garments are changeable. I mean, he's wearing a talis like a shtech tzibah. I've seen many soldiers. Sometimes they're soldiers, sometimes they're shul davening for yomad. So maybe I'll explain it soon. V'amitas hadava, and the real truth, ein daitoy shel adam yecholo lasigo l'chakro, a person cannot understand it. V'zeo shama kosu v'cheikol kai timtsoi matach l'shaki timotzi. And this is what the pasuk says, can you ever really understand God or analyze God until the very, very essence? Fine, that's the one unit. I want to elaborate a little bit on these points. One is from the Rambam himself. Fine, the Rambam says that the reason why we use all these terms is to use terms that people are familiar with. So you speak of God's hands, God's foot, God's so on. True, fine. In other words, he's explaining what these terms mean. But why use crude terms like that to describe a Kadosh Baruch Hu? I mean, could we just say that Kadosh Baruch Hu punished civilians instead of saying that he took out a sword? Why didn't we just use general terminology instead of imagery? That is a problem. And the Rambam himself and Moreh Nevuchim discuss it. I'm just going to read the relevant point because it's a very important point. The Rambam brings this expression down, Dibra Torah Kelashon B'nei Adam. That the Torah does use terminology that people normally use. So when one interprets the Torah as meaning God taking out a sword that he will punish people and not that there's a real sword, it's appropriate. Ulefikach ti'aruhu. He said like this. What does that mean? It doesn't mean that God, you may interpret the Torah in common human language. The Rambam says a very insightful understanding. It's the opposite. He says God took terminologies that are readily familiar to man and used them. And let me explain what he means. I mean, I don't want to read inside, but let me explain outside. There's a problem. When people become very, very sophisticated, the old Avodah Zarahs used to think of that God is a big, thick piece of wood, and it likes to eat and sleep. And you know, that was a very primitive way of thinking, and that's Avodah Zarah. Fine, we'll pass that. Modern sophisticated way of thinking is God is the most beautiful idea that man ever created. It's so sophisticated and it's so above and beyond. It's not real. It's like the famous Dear Virginia letter. I don't know if you're all familiar. This is one of the things we were brought up with. In a little girl in the early 20th century wrote in a letter to New York Times asking them, she heard from some people that Santa Claus doesn't really exist. Is it true? Who would know better than the New York Times? So this became like a classic in American lore. And so they sent her back a letter. Her name was Dear Virginia. Santa Claus exists and certainly does exist. In the heart of every good person and in the mind of every noble man, in the innermost recesses of every American, a whole long letter which is basically saying he does not exist. But it's very important to have an idea of a Santa. No, it's the most important thing to believe in a Santa. But someone was telling me he started going to college now. One of the Bachim in Yeshiva. He's taking a humanities course, and he said the professor was a very fascinating person. And he said he profoundly believes in God, but the God of everyone. He says, actually, call it life. Life itself. It's the same as God to me. And at that point, you've basically defined it out of any reality. So the flip side of Avodah Zarah is when it's a meaningless entity. The way a very modern, secular, personal, reformed Jew might believe that it's a noble, spirited idea, ideal, but it's not that there is an entity that is aware, conscious, concerned, and pronouncing its will. It's nothing like that. So the Rambam says we use terminology that implies very strongly to anybody who reads it, God has a hand. I concepts don't have hands. The hand of God has landed upon and destroyed the city. It's done the other way around to concretize the idea and to give it reality. And that's why he says these are terms that a person at first glance understands in a certain way. And he says, Ulefikach taruah betorim amar magashmus. The reason why we described him with terms that are physical Kidei lahoros alav shehu yisalav matzi, in order to impress us that he actually exists. Ki eina amon masik bein rishim mitzias lagov tevat. The only things that exist are real entities. You know, things, thingamajis exist. And that's why the first description was hand, foot, eye, and so on, because it's a physical reality. He says, because the common man does not grasp that concepts have reality, only corporal entities. Vasha eina guf o mutzi biguf, something which is not corporal, eina mutzi etzlam, is something that doesn't exist. So if we were to describe in the Torah God as something that is an idea, then people would be very clear to them that it doesn't exist. And that's why it's a very fine line. Children do tend to imagine God in physical terms. A child certainly can't conceptualize. So you're caught between, on the one hand, the child not thinking of Avodah Zarah, on the other hand, it's got to be a reality. Hashem likes this, Hashem doesn't like this, Hashem is happy with me, Hashem is sad with me. It's very, very important to tread that line of its existence, and a cruder person and a less educated person will give it some sort of substance, and yet on the other hand, as much as possible to eliminate it, because that direction of Avodah Zarah. That's the point that he's making over here. It's a Rambam, it's a Mor Nevuchim, the first part, Chavav, and really, really, it's a very fundamentally Yisodus point. By the way, the Rambam spends the good part of the first part of Mor Nevuchim. People made a mistake why it's called a guide for the perplexed, because most people actually never read it. So they think it's a guide for the perplexed because, you know, people have different questions and so on. The point that he addresses in the first third of it or so is somebody, he's writing to a Talmud of his, and he's saying, you are someone who studied a lot and have risen to a high madrega being Talmud Chacham, and you are perplexed by all of the psukim and medrashim that seem to indicate some sort of corporality to God. So let me explain all these terms. And about 40 chapters, most of it is explaining different terms, what they mean. Most people will find this boring, like anything. It's just
glad my way through. It's very repetitive.
And by the time you get to the good part, you're gone.
You pick it up again and start from the back.
Now, the next part is not repetitive, but it's very, very heavy. You always wonder that these people find the right Mor Nevuchim, the right places, like had to plow through all of it to get to it. But the first part of it he felt was extraordinarily important to take each term and explain, give it a meaning that makes sense to a person. What does it mean, God's eyes, his hand, and so on and so forth. So that's one point that I want to introduce, was this Rambam, why it was important to have it. There's a second point I wanted to bring in, which is sort of not like the Rambam, and it's a very, very important point, because the later Mekubalim, so to speak of it in that way. The Rambam's point is definitely correct by everyone's standards, that when we learn a pasuk that says God, it's God's hand came out and struck us, it means like a hand strikes those who are sinning, so too God caused people to suffer who sinned. That is definitely the aleph base of learning a Gemara. But the implication of that is as follows. God was writing a Torah. He needed to convey a message to us about Yetzias Mitzrayim. And Hashem said, okay, what are the nice terms to use that'll get the message home? And I, with an upraised hand and a mighty sword, I redeemed you from Mitzrayim. Those are poetic terms borrowed from human experience to convey the message that it just becomes a reality, and the type of nace it was, and so on. That's the way the Rambam learns it, and it's definitely the pshat, so to speak, the aleph bez of pshat. The Mekubalim later, especially the Ramchal, especially almost everybody, but the ones who speak about it, specifically Ramchal speaks about this, the Shelah speaks about it quite a lot, and the Sefer that I have here is called Avodas HaKodesh. Avodas HaKodesh was an early Kabbalah Sefer written before the Arizal, a very fundamental, it's written by Rav Meir Ben Gabbai, who the Maral considered his spiritual Rebbe. In other words, he never actually was a Talmud of his, and his Sefer is light Kabbalah. It's not really Kabbalah, but he does a lot of introducing of elementary terminology in his language. In other words, it's an earlier version. It doesn't have the heavy technical languages. One of the things he does is he basically repeats the Rambam's explanations for all of the different elements, and it gives them a twist. Notice when the Rambam speaks about the hand of God, the eye of God, and so on, he does it his own way. Notice he basically takes the same terms, explains it a little bit differently, and in Perek Samachay, for some odd reason, is where he explains this. He says, the Rambam is certainly right as an elementary explanation, but it's a lot deeper than that. Now, I'll explain it outside, but it's not a long perek, but it's going to be very tedious to read inside. But it's in this fourth chelek, or third chelek, which is called chelek atachlis, perek samachay. Okay, he says as follows. Hashem had decided on compartmentalizing different ways of dealing with different situations. We spoke about this, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu uses different approaches. And that's where we get 10 spheros and 10 halnagos and 10 malachim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu uses defined ways of interacting with us. So he doesn't interact with us in his oneness, because that's something we would not be able to understand. He interacts with us in different focused interactions, whether it's chesed, whether it's gvura, whatever it is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has different ways of dealing, and those are systems we can grab. We can understand God rewarding people that are doing well, we can understand God punishing, we can understand God hiding himself, we can understand God coming out, fine. That compartmentalization translated into a static system is called limbs. In other words, take a one cell being. So to the naked eye, that cell is a jack of all trades. It eats, it eliminates waste products, it somehow has kids, it floats around. You know, like a one-celled amoeba is a jack of all trades. Naturally, you can look down into it, and there is specialized structures. But by and large, there's a tremendous difference in a human being who's got a very differentiated tissues, where the liver is a liver, and the kidney is a kidney, the stomach's a stomach, the hand's a hand, the muscles are muscles, to an amoeba, which is sort of a jack of all trades type of thing, where it's not in any way. You need to go down to a much lower level to find the compartmentalization of that being. So you have two living things. One that sort of the blob does everything, and one that there are very, very specialized subunits. Now, my brother's father was once laying in a hospital, and In Israel, you know, there are five people in a room. It's not, you know, the private rooms don't exist. And so there was a fellow laying next to him, and he took a guess and he said, you know, this guy looks very physical. Must be a truck driver. Turns to the guy and he says, where do you work? So he says, at Hebrew U. So he felt a little bit kind of, you know, missed that one. He said, tell me, in which faculty do you work? He says, in all of them, he says, I do the bathrooms and the showers and stuff. He says, don't differentiate. They, you know, I'm, you know, what's the interdisciplinary? But a human being's got very, very clearly defined a verb. So the corollary of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's actions that are clearly defined would be a body with clearly defined entities. So the actions of God in one way are called Yad Hashem. Forgetting about a body a second. It, just like we spoke of Chesed and Gvura and Tiferes and whatever other Lashonos you want to use, you can use those same, you can create the same system with different functions. Just like the human being has different hands that have a certain dexterity, feet that carry weight and run, stomach that digests, a heart that beats, you know, it can be translated into static entities, and we would call that limbs. So compartmentalizing activity would correspond to compartmentalizing the body. Now, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a person that he perfect himself and that he work on himself to be godlike. And since we can't relate to a one, you know, do-it-all God, we relate to different things. One person, we work with our mind to understand Torah, to be godlike with our understanding. We work with our hearts to that our feelings should be like that. We work with our hands to do mitzvahs. We work with our eyes for kedusha. You know, all of the different elements of our body, like it says, every mitzvah is connected a certain aver. It means that the way, just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu created sections of his all-encompassing will, he gave a person different subdivisions. So one person is very good at keeping Shabbos, but he's got a problem with Lashon Hara. The other person got very good Lashon Hara, he's got a problem with davening. The third person, you know, and everybody's got his complement of different parts of his body, and each one is a different aver and works in a certain way. Therefore, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created man in his image, means the following, and it says it, our body carries in itself physically a representation of that, of those ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The human body biologically, as again, I'll stand corrected, as much as I understand, is on the one hand, it's marvelous. On the other hand, we could have designed it better. I think they once had a picture of, I think it was Scientific American about a year or two ago, about the perfect human body. She looks ugly. I must say, you wouldn't want to marry her, especially since she's going to live like 250. The way they had it, this was like massive feet and sort of slanted back. You know, if you're building it, the human body it seems like a wasted effort. Like standing upright is not a great way. It's not very stable. An animal on four is much more stable than
we don't really need the stability. I mean, the thing about the body is it can rejuvenate.
No, but to walk upright is a tremendous amount of effort for very little in return that we can think of. Walking on all four is stable. It doesn't put the weight on one point. It's got the human body is very fine.
You can't use the hands for anything.
What?
You can't use the hands for anything.
True. Walking
upright frees our hands to do all sorts of things.
Well, it could have added two pods or three pods or something. But whatever it is, a lot of the human, what it is, and in Kabbalah's form, it is a direct, so to speak, physical representation. The fact that we have a right side and a left side that are almost equal. The fact that the mind is at the very top of the body. The fact that it's connected by a narrow neck to the rest of the body. The fact that there are shoulders underneath the head. Every single aspect of the human being is a reflection of those Mahalchim HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, in effect, it's the opposite of what the Rambam is saying. The Rambam is saying like this, hey, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us a Torah, and he wanted to tell us, if you're going to be bad people, I'm going to punish you. What's the best metaphor for punishing? A patch. So if you people are going to be bad, I'm going to give you a patch. So human beings were designed in whatever Chachma HaKadosh Baruch Hu had biologically, and then needing metaphors to impress us, HaKadosh Baruch Hu picked the metaphor that would be most striking to us. The Mekubalim, and this is what he says here, say it's the exact opposite. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the first thing he did was he split the oneness of his all encompassment into parts so that we can say there's Kedusha and there's Chachma and there's Tefillah and there's Chesed and there's all sorts of different activities. All are a part of the picture, all are like one color of that rainbow of spirituality. Once we have that in place, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't just give us one mitzvah, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us different parts of mitzvahs, so now the human body is a reflection physically of those different mitzvahs. So the mitzvah that corresponds to the yad reflects itself in its hand. So the hand can do. It's where a person's strength lies. It's where a person's real activity is. And it corresponds to a certain element called yad. And tefillin might be the right mitzvah, which, if we want to represent tefillin, a hand that's active and strong or whatever it is, might be the right representation. And so on. So every part of the human body is a representation of an element that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's given as a subdivision of goodness, mitzvahs, and so on. So now when HaKadosh Baruch Hu says Yad, it's the other way around. That's the right description. Yad Hashem is like describing Chesed Hashem. It's you can divide the system into bits and pieces, and you get Yad, Einayim, Regel, and so on. What we have, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us as we're a reflection of that emes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So hey, we've got a yad also, and when we perfect the hand, it looks in a ruchnistic way like that which is called yad Hashem. So if a person's hand embraces somebody and comforts somebody, then in the right time, in the right place, then that yad is a reflection of yad Hashem. If a person's feet carry him to do the mitzvah at the right time and takes him to the right place, and that's what his feet become trained to do, so those feet are actually like the reglaim. He says the word that they say, Yesh HaChachmeim is similar to Amru Eiver Matzik Eiver, that every organ of ours contains an organ of God, so to speak. God's organs are the subdivisions of that one truth, and each organ of ours has the ability to be a host, so to speak, for one truth of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's why when people start with these things about what's more important, okay, tell me the truth. Is putting on tefillin more important or not speaking Lashon Hara about somebody more important? And this is always, so you ask somebody, well, you know, I don't know, if kids, you always played it. Let's say, I remember as kids, we used to have this game, okay, these primitives the savages in Africa has captured you. You have a choice. You can be boiled alive or beaten or eaten up by ants. Which do you choose? So, well, I really don't want to. No, you got to choose. You got to choose. You know, like, what I'm saying, you know, it's like part of a kid doesn't understand.
Curtain number three.
What?
Curtain number three.
You know, you got to choose which one you want. The metzias that we have is, each element in us is has in itself, it's so to speak, a seat for that anhaga of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And when a person is mekadosh it, he that kedusha, that eva gets that kedusha. So it's almost the exact opposite approach of the Rambam. The Rambam's approach is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's reality is conceptual, and therefore we looked for terms to give it a sense that it is real, and therefore we needed terms that were reality, and we chose terms that are real to us, like a hand, like a foot, and so on. The Mekubalim go the other way, and both are true. In other words, when you read the Pesukim at first glance, the Rambam's Pshat is the first approach, and what the Mekubalim are saying is simply a deep approach. Their approach is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Hanhagas divide themselves up into terms such as yad and regel and so on. When our organs are appropriately developed through mitzvahs, then so asking which mitzvah is more important is as if mitzvahs were just ways to earn money. So if profession A gets you $100,000 and profession B gets $150,000, so obviously, you know, business B is a better business. But we ask a person, would you rather have, you know, what's better to lose, this or that or the other? There's no reason to say what's more important, a hand or a foot. That's a meaningless question. A perfect human being has all of it. And a person without a hand is unfortunately, it's handicapped as a person without a foot. Each one is a suffering, whichever way it is. It's not like money where you say, you know, if the dollar is stronger than the euro, so $1 million is better than €1 million. You don't need one of each. It's not true. These are subdivisions of one emes. And a person who knows a lot of Torah but speaks Lashon Hara does not have the emes. And a person who's careful with lashon hara, but is a real amaretz, and he does not have the full emes. It's not they're all subdivisions. They're not just different ways to get a lot of points. That's really the
something more important than others. For instance, in the physical, you were saying, if somebody said you have to lose two of your eyes and ears, you'd obviously rather lose one of each. The same thing if you compare murder with versus something minor.
Correct. Halachically, it's also valid. If you got a choice between being Mechal Shabbos or doing this, you got to choose. But Rav Hunda Zichron of Bracha once said, beautiful pshat. I heard from many years ago. In the Mishnah, it says you should not. You should not weigh the schar of a mitzvah. You should not look at what a lighter mitzvah is, a mitzvah kala, because you don't know what the reward of a mitzvah is. So he asked, well, the Torah gives us very clear a clear ladder of evaluation. There's some things that you do, you get kares for, sometimes you get skila, sometimes malchus, sometimes it's just rabbanan. There are clear evaluations. So what does it mean not to regard something as a mitzvah kala or mitzvah chamura? So the witness said a very nice marshal. He said two pshat, and the one pshat is relevant to us. When you ask a person what's more important, the heart or a hand, so he answers the heart. So it's true when if a hand hurts, so it creates level A of debilitation. If there's a problem with the heart, it creates a much larger degree of debilitation, and you know you suffer a lot more. There's a lot of things that come to a stop if the heart's not working well. But he said, if let's say a person's in perfect health, does he feel better in his heart than in his hand? No. It's you know, he feels good all over. He doesn't feel better in his heart than in his hand. He said, the Torah gave us a scale for evaluating the problems. If one person is not a chaza, and one person is Chal Shabbos, this person has done level A of damage to his body, and this person on level C. If you got to choose between the two, you can either eat chaza or be Chal Shabbos, then yes, if one or two has got to be missing, we know which one, the way a doctor has to evaluate, if you got to make a choice, God forbid, then there's a way to choose. But when everything is perfect, you're not more perfect in your hand than in your heart than you are on your hand. Being perfect, a person who feels healthy just feels healthy all over. He just feels good in general because it's one state. So when the problems, you look at the subdivisions. Where does it hurt? Where's the problem? And then you can evaluate how much damage is there. When it's good, all of it together, a person feels good because just feels a person in robust health just feels good all over. Okay, so to sum up, so the Rambam said that God's incorporeality is a pasuk as well as a svara. I guess the reason why the Rambam says like that is because if it was just a svara, even though he feels logically it's impeccable, it would not maybe be an avera. I don't know why the Rambam feels a need also to bring a pasuk, or maybe the pasuk is not so clear and just knowing that that's the right shot puts it into the pasuk. I'm not sure because it's strange that the Rambam says it that it's an impeccable svara, and then he says I have psukim for it also. Be it as it may, the Rambam brings the psukim. The Rambam said, we saw the Rambam Amor Avuchim that explains that the reason why we use such terminology, even though these are all kinuyim, they're just metaphors, but the Torah used these metaphors to impress upon us that it's real, it's true. It's not a concept in the sense. When we speak of an idea, it's the opposite of an idea is a reality. Ideals and reality are opposites almost. So the Torah impressed, no, there's real punishment, and there's real simcha, and there's real reward. Then we saw the next step, the Mekubalim explained this idea one step further. It's not that the body existed, and God wanted some really imminent metaphors to use. That's why he said a hand and a foot and a mouth. It's the other way around. God's different subdivisions of emes are represented in terms such as yad, regel, einayim, azdayim, and so on. God created a man in his image, which means even physically the conceptual arrangement of his body reflects HaKadosh Baruch Hu's emes. where his ears are, where his eyes are. There's a reason why the ears stick out and the eyes recede. Every part of the human body is used by Mikubalim to bring out, to tell us, they explain where the representation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Mahalchim are. And therefore, the Pasuk uses Yad and Reg, all these things, to tell us exactly what is the Mahal Hashem. We can now see it in our own flesh. There's a reason why the hand has a sign on it. Keeping the mitzvahs that are associated with each part of a person brings out that particular midah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it all goes together. When it clicks together and all the parts are in place, then the whole thing is one, just like a puzzle. You know, when you look at a puzzle at pieces, at the beginning, you look at the exterior shape. You don't even know what it is. So you look at the exterior shape and you say, oh, this has got like this funny widget in. Let's see where there's another piece like that. When the whole picture is complete, you say, ah, it's a lake with geese. You don't see those subdivisions anymore. When the body acts together, all the different elements, you see one complete unit, and that's the Emes Hashem. Until that time, it's Evarim, and the Zohar speaks of the mitzvahs as being Evarim HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The word Aver in modern Hebrew, besides being a physical limb, it's also used like in math. When you have one part of an equation, you know, that's called an Aver, a limb of the equations. It's used as bits and pieces of things also. That's the way the word Aver is used in equations. It's used in parts of molecules. I mean, it's a modern Hebrew word that has those connotations. And therefore, when you put them together, you have the entire emes.